What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 33 of Lobbing Scorchers. This is Ari Lilienwall. I got producer Noah here with me virtually. Noah, say what's up to the people one night after Open Cup shenanigans at Starfire.
I love Open Cup shenanigans, Ari. I had a great time. I got chicken strips, a lumpita, and this ball of chicken for like $13. I absolutely adore Starfire. And I don't know, that was, as I said, one of the most entertaining games we're probably going to see all season.
The Seattle Sounders have indeed advanced into the round of 16 in the U.S. Open Cup, taking a penalty kick shootout victory over USL Championship side Louisville City FC after a 2-2 draw in regulation and extra time. So we're going to be diving into that on that show. We've got a special guest for you today to talk about all that. But before we get into the game, want to take care of our usual housekeeping at the top of the show and say another thank you to our new paid subscribers. We've got a few new ones to thank. We really appreciate you guys. So I'm going to go down the whole list because I know I've been saying it every week for the last few weeks, but we just really appreciate all the support that we've been seeing from the show the last few weeks and how our listenership is growing. I want to thank Rhombus. I don't know if you have a real name that you want me to shout out on the show, but go ahead and message me if you do. Thank you for the $3 sub. I'd like to thank Nate Bontye. If that's mispronounced, you can also message me. Thank you for the $5 sub. Tyler Nakatsu. Thanks, Tyler. Thank you to Owen Mason. And then David Rodriguez, Christopher Maley, Bill Breitenbach, Mike Lentini, Aaron B., Derek Richards, Sounder Knaves, Dan Pivetto, Mike Standish, Ryan Shane, Eric Stanley, my nephews, CJ and Miles Marinakis, Andy Hill, Ian Mitchell, and Greg Hoker. I know that's it's getting to be a long list to read every week, but I feel obligated just because we appreciate the support that you guys have shown the show that much. But let's get into the Sounders game now, because like you said, it was a really entertaining game. I think there's a lot to chew on coming off this penalty kick victory over Louisville City FC. And to do that, we're going to bring in a very good friend of mine. He's one of the big dogs in Sounders media, without a doubt. My friend Jackson Feltz, host of Sounders Weekly pre, half, and post game shows on Sports Radio KJR. I go on his show on KJR every single week to do my around the league hit. You know, I like to ask our guests sometimes just a little bit about their background, so the listeners who might not know can learn a little bit about them. And I think you got an interesting one, man, because we kind of came up at the same time in the Sounders media scene. I think we're pretty much the same age, and you really I think you've done a valuable thing in the Seattle sports media landscape, which is that you put on for the Sounders on sports talk radio, which a lot of MLS teams don't get that treatment. Some do, but you really took the lead and the mantle on that, on making sure that the Sounders were represented in the sports talk radio landscape in Seattle. And you know, I think everyone in the Sounders fan base in Sounders land appreciates you for that. But why don't you just real quick, before we talk about the game, tell people like why that's important to you and kind of how you got started in becoming the KJR Sounders guy.
Yeah, no, Ari, I think that we both started covering the team around the same time. You might have been a little bit before me. I joined on in like May of 2015. And like those first couple of years, you know, establishing those relationships, you know, and you know, just following the team for the first time. And then I know like in the late 2016, we both were on Stephen Agin's Radio Cascadia podcast, and we're like, oh, this is fun. That was a good time. Let's see if we, you know, can do something with this. So I went back to my boss at KJR and said, listen, I've been covering this team for a couple of years. You know, we have a really good podcast thing going. Why don't we take it to the air? And after lots of convincing, he said, all right, thumbs up. You guys get the 9 a.m. slot on Saturday mornings. And thus was born Radio Cascadia Live, Saturday mornings on 950 KJR. The funny part was, God, you remember this. Was it the second or third show that I got sick the morning of?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. That's the sickest I've ever seen a human being. That was wild.
No, it was funny because I think it was the second or third show. About 8 a.m. I message all the guys and I say like, oh, by the way, I'm not feeling great. And we all got to the station at like 8:30 and there was zero chance I could have taken the air, but I was trying to push through. It was a war scene inside the studios of KJR that day. But you know, we made it through, you know, not being on the air that day, had a good runny show, had Garth Lagerwey on every single week in 2017. Then KJR got the Sounders radio rights in 2018. You know, we put in the effort. We showed that, you know, we as KJR cared about soccer and cared about the Sounders, and I cared and repped that pretty well. And we got the radio rights. And since 2018, it's just been, you know, pregame, halftime, postgame, plus the Sounders weekly shows on Wednesdays at 7, rocking and rolling, and just trying to represent the sport we love well and push it out to, you know, your average Joe driving down, you know, I-5, who, you know, says, what's this soccer thing? You know, why should I care about soccer? Just trying to represent the sport well and bring in any new fans that we can, because that's, we all want to see this sport grow and become, you know, what we think it deserves to be in this country. And I just try to do right by it.
100%, man. And we definitely appreciate you for that. Like I said, it's not all that common in the sports media landscape right now for an MLS team to get that type of coverage. And I think it's important that the Sounders do get that type of coverage. You know, some people might disagree and want Seattle Sports Talk Radio to only talk about the Seahawks and the Mariners. But the Sounders are a big team with a big fan base, and they deserve that the platform that you've given them on a station like KJR. And you do good stuff every week. If people haven't listened to the KJR pre, half, and post game shows, and Jackson's Sounders weekly show every week, which, you know, I'm biased because I go on it every week, but it really is good stuff for anyone who wants to consume more Sounders content. But
I love it because at halftime when I'm using the bathroom or waiting in line to get food, I just get to hear Jackson's glorious voice, and almost always he has the right takes.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Let's get into this game, though. Does that sound good, guys?
It'll never not be weird for me to know that people are going to the bathroom listening to my voice. That's going to be the oddest thing through my entire life. Yeah.
I mean, it is cool when the entire men's restroom is cheering when you say something. It really brings people together sometimes. So I think you can, you know, you can sit on that, and that's definitely a positive.
Urinals in my voice, bringing
right,
people
together. That was our Lobbing Scorchers segment on the halftime bathroom situation at Louisville. Let's get into Sounders Louisville City FC, because this was a very entertaining Open Cup fixture at Starfire last night. Both of you guys were there. I was watching from my house. But the Sounders advanced. So that was a positive. It wasn't necessarily the prettiest method of advancing that I've ever seen, but it was definitely entertaining. Let's talk about our reaction to this lineup first, guys. I'll lay mine down, and then we can go round table. I think there's a little bit of debate every time there's an Open Cup game like this, particularly earlier in the tournament, when most teams are going to be deploying a rotated starting 11. Is that the right approach? Or I got a couple of questions about this on my crowdsourcing tweet after the game. Is the team kind of downgrading the importance of the Open Cup by fielding a lineup like this? And I'll just give my take to start off, which is that I know a lot of people aren't going to like it, and they feel like that rotated lineup does downgrade the importance of the tournament, and they feel like the team saying that they want to win every trophy and compete for this tournament is just lip service when they're fielding rotated lineups with younger guys and not as many of the big first team stars. I think that a lineup like this is pretty much how you should approach it when you have fixture congestion as they do right now. And it's not just about the fixture congestion. It's also about the fact that this team has struggled quite a bit in league play this year. And I think it's worth getting guys minutes that you maybe haven't seen as much to see what they bring to the table and see if they deserve more minutes for the first team. So that's a factor in it too. But I think the way Schmetz lined it up is how I expected him to line it up, and I think that's the right way to line it up. But and it's kind of creates a lose-lose situation for a coach, because if you can't play your very first choice 11 both in this game and in the game on the weekend in Portland. You can't. Like, you're risking injury if you do that. So if he plays like the first choice lineup for this game, then he's rotating in Portland for a huge rivalry game when you need league points this weekend, and people are going to be pissed off about that. So it really is like a situation where there's going to be outrage either way. And with that being the case, I prefer the rotated lineup for the Open Cup game against the USL opponent, and you try and do what you can with that lineup to advance, which they ended up doing to their credit. And before I kick it to you guys, the other thing I would say is, you know, there's a lot of takes flying around about how embarrassing it is for Seattle that this was a competitive game and it's a USL opponent, so you should just roll over them easily. I mean, I said on the preview show that they were not going to roll in this game easily. I've seen enough of these games to know that when you have a rotated MLS side against a hungry USL side, it typically is a competitive game. But I would just say people should be mindful of disrespecting your opponent. Louisville City is they're a good side with professional players that have experience, that have talent, that have pride. I know they're a lower division side, but like, you got to understand, these USL teams, they're still professional outfits, and they're hungry. Like, these we talked about it on the preview show, but these Open Cup games are huge for them, and they are like chomping at the bit every time to eliminate MLS opposition. And you saw it last night. Detroit City beat the Houston Dynamo on penalties. And then I'm really glad that I get to bring this up. New Mexico United knocked Real Salt Lake out of the Open Cup. My hometown club, New Mexico United, I'm a diehard religious fan, totally bammed on their MLS opposition. So you see that happen every year. And it's not, I really like, I take umbrage with the notion that an MLS team should be embarrassed about playing a competitive game against a USL side. I think that's disrespecting your opposition and not giving them agency that they have in this scenario. But anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent right there. I want to kick it to you, Jackson, since you're the guest. What did you think of the lineup, and did you think Schmetz's approach fielding this 11 was the right one?
Yeah, I really liked the lineup, and I thought overall you had the nice mix of veterans and young guys. I mean, look at the spine of the team first up. I know Andrew Thomas, you know, hasn't got a lot of time, but, you know, he's up there in age because of his time at Stanford, so I wouldn't call him, like, you know, a youngster. You have John Bell, a veteran center back, next to Stuart Hawkins, so, you know, right there, that's a good example of combining, you know, a veteran guy with a youth. You have Josh Atencio in the holding midfield. Dylan Tevez has had a good amount of experience so far, and then you have Danny Mazowski up top. I mean, the spine of the team, I think, you know, had a lot of experience. And then you do have, you know, people like Paul Rothrock and Georgie Manungu on the wings to provide not only the pace, but that youth, the spryness. You have Leva, who's a veteran as well. And so you had this great mix, I thought, of veterans and youth. And then you put in, to cap it all off, a captain in Alex Roldan, who's, I mean, he's freaking captained El Salvador. I mean, this is a guy who started in MLS Cup. I mean, this is one of the most experienced players on the Sounders overall roster, and he's your captain. So I loved the way Brian mixed it in there. The criticism against that, obviously, is the fact that they haven't played a lot together. So, you know, you don't have that cohesion that a Louisville City very clearly had, guys who have been playing together for 7 games with 6 wins, 1 loss, and no draws, second place in the Eastern Conference in USL, having just a tremendous start to their season. So you don't have that cohesion, but I think you make up for it with that, you know, the dynamic element of being able to mix the youth and the veterans. So I completely agree. Not to mention, as you pointed on very accurately, you have Portland to worry about. So to start Leo Chu and let Leo Chu play 70 minutes against Louisville, knowing that he might be needed for, you know, 20 minutes against the Portland Timbers on Sunday, like, no, you don't do that. You keep Leo Chu, you know, in the bag so that you can, you know, make sure you maximize the minutes for Portland on Sunday. And, you know, I think Brian did well on that, you know, feeling that this game might go 120 minutes. You bring him on late in the second half to be able to, you know, or maybe it was the start of extra time. Actually, it was the last 30 minutes. So knowing that, all right, we just Leo for 30 minutes. He's going to be good to go for Portland. Love that element. Alex Roldan, obviously, you know, came off the field as well. So you didn't have to necessarily, you can play Alex, I think, reasonably well on Sunday and not worry about it. He's a guy that I think can do a Wednesday to Sunday at this point in his career pretty easily. You know, you took Atencio off the field, so Atencio can give you a little bit in Portland. So you have to manage these things, because at the end of the day, yes, this Open Cup mattered, but the reality of the situation is it's the freaking Portland Timbers at Providence Park, and you know, you want to have all your bullets available for that game.
Yeah, you have to. Like I said, I mean, it would be nice if it was physically possible to play a Rui Diaz, play a Jordan Morris, Russ Knight, right, Christian, like all your first choice guys in this midweek game, and then turn around and play him right again on the weekend. But it just doesn't work like that physically. And like I said, you know, if it was reversed, then it would just be outrage in the opposite direction that they were rotated for the Portland game. So it's really, like I said, it's a bit of a lose-lose. But in this case, fortunately, they were able to advance, and it wasn't, you know, that storyline is less of an issue. Guys, Paul Rothrock. You guys ready to talk about Paul Rothrock?
Let me lob. I got one to say. I got one scorcher to drop. I think it's funny. People, I was all up in my mentions. Shout out Sander Naves. This one we didn't see eye to eye on. He was complaining a lot about this lineup, saying we were not taking this seriously, that we were out of contention for the MLS Cup or anything. It's silly. It's silly because every single one of these people who were complaining about the lineup were also complaining that there were no young players getting minutes on the field and that Brian doesn't ever rotate his roster. So what do you want? Because you cannot get upset when Brian plays, like Jackson clearly laid out for you, a good core of starters, a good core of secondary players that get real solid MLS minutes, and then kids who have literally never touched the pitch in a Sounders kit. Like, what are you talking about? This is the perfect lineup. We got to see exactly what we could potentially get out of these players in a very competitive match. Louisville City is a great team, and I thought that it showed us way more than putting these guys in for 10 minutes would. So if you want to get mad at me, go for it. But you better keep that energy and stop talking about how you want Brian to play young guys. Anyway, that's my scorcher.
A lot of people were comparing it to the LAFC lineup. I think that might have been what Sounder Naves was saying. Like LAFC had their Open Cup game, and they had more starters out there. They had Bwanga out there. So that is a choice that Steve Cherundolo, who got a red card in that game, which was really funny, he made that choice. I don't know how much like I don't think that's smart that he did that. Like, I would not have played Bwanga in that game if I were him. But it seems like Steve C with LAFC, he's kind of less into squad rotation than most MLS coaches. I remember when they were in CONCACAF Champions League, as it was then known, last year, I was getting straight up annoyed at how little squad rotation they employed and how much it seemed to not affect them. Like, apparently Bwanga can just play every game like that, and he's just a physical force of nature. So I don't know, but I don't really know if Steve Cherundolo starting Bwanga in that game is a good point against like the lineup that Schmetz rolled out, just because I don't think he should have done that.
Well, and I don't think that LAFC have as many fixtures in rapid succession as the Sounders. And I don't think that LAFC is down to basically starting their second string lineup at this point in most MLS games. So, like, I really don't want to hear it frankly.
And the reality is, if Bwanga had gotten hurt in that game against Vegas, then Chirondolo is, people are calling for his head. People are calling for him to be fired today.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a good point. Guys, Paul Rothrock opened the scoring in this game. Imagine that. Another U.S. Open Cup game for Paul Rothrock. Another goal. It's all he does is score goals. Great finish. Georgie on the assist. Good, nice ball in by Georgie. Great finish by Paul Rothrock. And so, you know, we've had a long time Paul Rothrock agenda on this show, and it was only fueled by the sequence of events that took place in this game with Paul Rothrock scoring the opener. But here's the thing I've noticed about Paul Rothrock, and I tweeted this last night, but I'll say it. I'll say it on the show. He employs an interesting tactic when he plays soccer that other Sounders forwards don't employ as much as he does. Okay? Like, first of all, he made a run towards the front of the goal away from the defender and gave himself space to get a shot off. And then once he got the service in, he shot the ball towards the goal and he placed it where the goalkeeper wasn't. And it went in the net. And then once it goes in like that, that's how you score. And he's done that. I mean, the sample size is growing, folks. I mean, the Paul Rothrock thing, at a certain point, it's sort of a bit, and I'm framing it as a bit right now, but like, at what point does it not become a bit, and at what point do you give him a chance to do this in MLS? Like, I'm really not doing that much of a bit right now. I'm serious. Like, with how much this team has struggled to score goals and how consistently he's scored goals when he's got his chances, I know most of it is in Open Cup, but he scored a game-winning goal in an MLS game too. I mean, I'm going to start beating this drum. Every time he scores another goal, I'm going to start beating this drum again. Like, he's the only guy on the team that consistently scores goals right now. And it's been like that dating back to last season. And last night, I'm sorry, like, if anyone was tired of the Paul Rothrock agenda has just got fueled tenfold by what we saw last night.
It's funny because you look at the not only the history of just their overall playing career, but you look at the size, the speed, you know, the measurables of like a Leo Chu versus a Paul Rothrock, right? And Chu has the speed, and Chu has the size, and Chu has the experience in that regard. But there's something about soccer, you guys, and you know this, where there's this intangible aspect that you just can't measure, right? And it sometimes comes out in the form of just having these things where, like, I mean, remember the Houston game last year where the Sounders had to, you know, get a late goal and Paul Rothrock found himself, I want to say it was at the back post, and just redirected the ball into the back of the net, I think, with his chest. I mean, it's a good example of, like, Paul Rothrock just finding a way, and he always just seems to find a way. And it's that kind of intangible aspect that, you know, Leo Chu has all of these things, but at the end of the day, Paul Rothrock just has that thing. And so I'm with you. I'd love to see, you know, I don't think it's, you know, worthy of a Portland, you know, game, but, you know, on, you know, we have other games coming up, you know, that I think the Salt Lake on Wednesdays, that we have two Wednesday games with Real Salt Lake this month. You know, that seems like a perfect opportunity to, you know, when they're rotating the squad, let's see what Paul Rothrock, you know, has, if, you know, given the chance at the first team level, just roll him out there and see what he can do. The same goes for Georgie. I mean, and we can get into Georgie, but, like, just as an example, just see what these kids can do when given an opportunity, because it's that kind of fight and that intangible aspect where the measurables don't exactly match up, you know, and with the highest players in the club, I don't think, but at the same time, they can bring that little oomph that can create some magic. And, you know, Paul Rothrock finds himself in good positions. Can he do it at the MLS level on a consistent basis? That's yet to be determined. But, you know, based on scoring again in the Open Cup, third straight game at Starfire where he has scored, this fixture congestion they have this month leaves a perfect opportunity for a guy like him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny because I knew before the game started that he was going to score. It wasn't even a question in my mind. You know, when it happened, I was like, yep, sure enough. I mean, that's all he does. All Paul Rothrock does is score goals. So wasn't a shock to me to see him get another one. I say it a little bit in jest, but I do hope he gets more of a chance because I think he's actually shown that he's one of the most consistent goal scorers on this team, which, you know, that's not necessarily what when you went into the season, you didn't want Paul Rothrock necessarily to be your most reliable goal scorer, but it seems to me that that's the situation that you're in, and that should be accommodated. This was another strong game for the Moose agenda. Danny Musovski got Seattle's second goal of the match with a header off a free kick from Danny Leyva. That goal was all about the service from Danny Leyva. That was a really nice free kick. He was hitting dimes on those set pieces last night, but it was a nice finish by Moose. And, you know, if Paul Rothrock is one of the only guys on this team that's been consistently scoring goals, Musovski, you know, that's his second goal in all comps. And it seems like every time that he gets run, he plays well. He does something productive. He's gotten on the score sheet a couple times. So, I mean, I think anyone who's been wanting to see the Moose get more minutes, you got what you wanted in this game as well. Another goal for him. So the Sounders were up 2-0. Unfortunately, they choked the lead on a freak penalty kick call and just an unfortunate concession off a long throw-in. That penalty kick call was pretty tough. It got called on Alex Roldan, and it took a deflection off Cody Baker, I want to say, and Alex had his hands up vertically in the air, I think trying to not commit a handball, and the ball sort of freakishly popped up on him and hit him like in the shoulder. So he got pretty unlucky, and frankly, I mean, you know, I don't want to harp too much on the referees. I thought it was pretty much fine in this game, but I probably wouldn't have called that. I don't know. That's a 50-50 call. You guys have any like strong feelings on that PK call?
I think it's very harsh to call that, but I would also quickly mention, I mean, you could say the officiating is fine. Being there, and Noah, I know you were there, and maybe you can speak to this as well. There was a lot of jersey pulling and tugging and fouls that weren't even called, mostly on the side of Louisville. I don't know how many times. It must have been, you know, around 20 times I would see a Sounders, you know, player anywhere around the field. It usually was off ball. And it's just a Louisville player was just grabbing and dragging a Sounders player to halt them for a few seconds. And rarely, if ever, did any of those jersey pulls get called. So based on the combination of that and based on, you know, that harsh penalty, I thought it was a slightly suspect officiating we got last night.
I don't know. It's the Open Cup. These dudes are reffing high school games before this. Like, I'm not really too impressed with the performance. I think it is what it is, right? Like, I feel like I've become the ref apologist on this podcast, unfortunately, which is never a thing that you want to be. Listen, he was letting everything go. I mean, it's an Open Cup match. It's going to get scrappy. You've got a USL team that really wants this and honestly needs this to go well. And they're going to fight their ass off. And I don't think that it's a bad thing. I thought the young guys held up. Dude, Danny Leyva, I swear to God, was just getting pummeled. Just play after play, just pummeled on the ground. I know when he went to take the coin flip for penalties to see who would take first, he was literally just like, he looked so haggard. He was limping over to do the coin toss. And so, I mean, yeah, I think that the ref definitely lost the game, but also it's an Open Cup match. Things are going to happen. I don't think he did good. I don't think I would say he did good, but I don't think that it was like, oh, this is the reason that we performed poorly in this match.
It definitely wasn't the craziest like officiating sequence that I've seen in an Open Cup match at Starfire. I mean, we all remember the red card wedding, but I do think, you know, regardless of what you think of the call, I think Alex Roldan got a little unlucky on that play.
It was a penalty though.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I think it was a fair call, I guess. So the penalty tied it at 2-2, and no one scored for the rest of regulation and extra time. So this one was decided in penalties. And this penalty shootout was pretty funny, and there was a lot of penalties that were not well taken, let's say. But Seattle got it done. Andy T was on one. He did one of the funniest things I've ever seen a goalkeeper do, so I'm excited to recap that right now. Well, first of all, he was just kind of on one the whole shootout. He was making saves. He was strutting around. He was talking shit. But it kept happening where he would make like a really good save, and then the Seattle player would have a chance to win it, and they would miss their subsequent penalty. De Rosario's kid missed a penalty. Leo Chu missed his penalty. Leo Chu took a lot of heat after this game with the missed penalty not helping matters. But finally, so Andy T, it was after the De Rosario miss, and Andy T got fed up. He was tired of his saves going to waste, and it looked like Sota Kitahara was going up to take the penalty, and Andy T waved him off. He said, "Screw that. I'm taking this penalty kick." And then he bammed the last PK as hard as he could into the net. And then, Noah, you actually got this all on video and tweeted it out, and it's a really great video. But after Andy T hit the last PK, he ran full sprint down to the other end of the field, past the Louisville City players. And then I don't know if they started talking to him first or if he was just pumped up or what, but Andy T started talking all kinds of shit to Louisville City, which it was definitely entertaining to watch. I don't know if it was fully merited, but it was a good Andy T game. He made several important saves, including in the penalty kick shootout. And I would say overall, my takeaway on Andy T is that, and they just signed him to a contract extension, by the way. So he's going to be with the team for a while. And it seems like that contract extension indicates that he's seen as the kind of long-term succession plan for Stefan Fry. And I would just say that based on what I've seen from him this year, I feel pretty decent about that. To be an MLS starter, to be a starter in a top flight league, like, you got to be able to make game changing, game saving plays. You got to be able to make your saves in shootouts. You got to be able to stop penalties from time to time. Andy T has shown like aptitude for all of those things that you want to see in a top flight goalkeeper. And I thought that was on full display last night, both with how he played on the field. And then also I kind of like the swagger and the disposition. This team could use more juice like that, I think. So if the backup goalkeeper ends up providing it, I think that's fine. And that was just an all around pretty electric shootout performance from Andy T. That's what you want to see from your goalkeeper.
I do believe the kids call that aura. He's got aura.
Yeah, he definitely had the aura working. Did you see what happened on that sequence after the penalty where he was yelling at the Louisville players, like why he was that fired up and what exactly happened with that?
Yeah, before every single take for Louisville, I think almost every one of the eight takes, what would happen would, after the Sounders player struck, Thomas would walk out to the spot and just stand there and wait for the Louisville guy to approach. And the referee would say, "Hey, go back to your line, go back to your line." And then Thomas would take a few steps towards his line. The referee would turn around and Thomas would come back towards the line. He kind of kept, you know, egging him on and saying things. And he you know, for people who, you know, don't know Andrew Thomas, haven't watched him too much, this is kind of who he is. He has such an edge to him, and he has such a, you know, competitive instinct and in your face, you know, mentality from back there. He is such an, I guess intense would be the right word, but intense in a very, very good way. And he kept doing it throughout the penalty shootout where he was talking smack and he was definitely trying to get in the heads of Louisville players. Clearly it worked with, you know, the form of three saves, or three, you know, missed penalties. So I think that Andrew Thomas was already, you know, had that attitude. And I would assume if he's, you know, jawing at Louisville players, they may be jawing back. So right when he hits that and runs over and then tries to get in their face, he's naturally probably saying something like, "You like that? You went all Kirk Cousins," or he's just kind of saying like, "I told you, I told you." Yeah, that is prime and pure Andrew Thomas, just with bringing that intensity. And clearly, I mean, Ari, you mentioned it. I mean, this team, if they need some juice right now, it's coming in the form of Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, it was. You know, PK's shootout is so psychological, such a mind game. And you need whatever mental edge you can get over the opposition. And you see goalkeepers try all kinds of different tactics to get in the head and mess with the shooter. And one of the kind of like games within the game that I always enjoy watching is during a PK shootout like that with advancing in a tournament on the line. Like, what are you going to do to get yourself through? And like, you saw the full range of Andy T last night. He was on one and, It worked. He made a few really nice saves, and the team got through. And it was entertaining to watch at the end there. As far as young guys who impressed me, guys, I was going to throw some names out there. So Stu Hawkins is an interesting name just in general. This is a center back who has been really highly touted coming up through Seattle's academy. Everything I've heard of him and how they kind of talk about him is that he's expected to be a very prominent contributor to the first team. They love how this kid plays the game, and they have for years now. So it was cool to see him actually get some run with the first team, even if it was in an Open Cup game. He's been with Tacoma Defiance.
And the U-17 national team.
Yeah, this is a U.S. youth national team player as well, so that's part of his pedigree. And I thought he acquitted himself pretty well last night, in the sense that you didn't really see or hear that much from him, which for a defender is a pretty big compliment. Ideally, you want them to get to the point where you can point to a couple plays in a given game where they actually change the game, you know, make a goal line staving clearance, or just like a huge play to stop like a slide tackle to stop a counterattack. Like, you want to see that from your starting defenders eventually. But for this game, I thought the first foray into the Stu Hawkins experience, which I think is going to be a sneakily important thing for this team coming up in the next year or two here, like how he develops. I thought Stu did pretty well. I thought the Georgie experience continues to be a little bit of a mixed bag, but it's a fun mixed bag. I mean, reminds me a little bit of Leo Chu in some ways, to be honest. Like, he'll make a really good run. He'll do really well to find space and free himself up, and then put a ball in, but it's maybe not like the most refined final product. But you can definitely see the talent there, and he's definitely been fun to watch, which that's been nice to have injected into the team, I would say, even if like the end product hasn't fully been there. And then the other one I wanted to shout out was Snyder Brunel. This is another Academy product that they seem pretty high on, who I honestly don't really know that much about, haven't watched play all that much, so I was kind of curious to see him. And I thought he might have looked the best out of all the young guys, just in terms of how he looked on the ball. And then also, you know, watching a few Seattle players go up there and take really bad penalties, and a couple of them missed their penalties, Snyder Brunel went up there and he roofed his. So that was both satisfying to watch and pretty impressive to see from a young guy like that stepping up in that moment, where I'm pretty sure if he missed his, it would have been over and Louisville would have won. And he ripped that thing right in a pressure moment, and so that kind of speaks to another point though, which is that that's kind of why these games are so useful and important for these young guys. Like, Snyder Brunel would never have a chance to take a PK in a knockout setting in the MLS playoffs this year. But like in this situation with the Open Cup, where you're actually giving these guys those minutes, he actually has the opportunity to do that. That's invaluable experience for him to get the reps on the field and get those minutes, and then also like taking a penalty in that context with that much pressure and then getting the experience of making it, like that's the type of stuff that makes your young guys better. And that's, so that's another reason in support of using a younger lineup in this game. But anyway, those are the young guys that impressed me. Did you guys have any takes on any of the guys I mentioned, or have anyone else that you wanted to shout out that maybe we don't normally get to see over the course of the MLS season?
I would just quickly agree with all your points, Aria. I can't disagree with anything, including from Georgie to Brunel as well. Stuart Hawkins, I'll just quickly add on Stuart Hawkins, the fact that, you know, you mentioned he's going to be sneaky important for the next couple of years. He's going to be sneaky important for the next couple of months and next couple of weeks primarily, because, you know, timing didn't exactly work out well for the team where you trade Javier Arriaga and like in the next 10 days after you trade Javier Arriaga, Nathan goes down with his upper quad injury. He's out for, you know, a month or more. Or, you know, 2 months maybe, and then what was it, 6 to 8 weeks, was that it? I kind of forget. And then you have Gomez Andrade go down now, and he's out for 2 to 3 weeks per Brian Schmetzer on KJR. So, you know, I think we're in a situation right now where you have Jackson Reagan, you have John Bell, and you have Stuart Hawkins, and that's it. And there's so much fixture congestion over these next 2 to 3 weeks, conveniently with Aria, with Gomez Andrade out, that you're going to need center back depth. Enter Stuart Hawkins. And he's a kid who very clearly he has the size. I think he needs to put on some weight, I think, and put on some muscle. You know, we're waiting for him to kind of grow into form, a la Jackson Reagan when he was at Michigan, and look at Jackson Reagan now. But as Stuart Hawkins, you know, I mean, he's 17 years old, right? I mean, I think he turns 18 in September. As he ages and as he grows out, as he, you know, builds more muscle and has a few more cheeseburgers, I think you're going to see a center back develop that is pretty damn good. And then when you kind of look, I think, Ari, you know, to your point, the next couple of years out, I mean, listen, the reality of the situation, the reality of professional sports is Yeimar Gomez Andrade can't play forever. And at the point where Gomez Andrade, whether it's his contract up, whether he says, okay, I'm done, whatever, you know, at that point, you are looking at, you know, who's going to be your next center back and sitting next to Jackson Reagan for the next X number of years. And for my money, Stuart Hawkins makes all the sense in the world. He's good on the ball, just like Jackson. He has the size. You know, as Jackson develops his leadership, you know, I think that we're going to see him being able to take that command of the back line. And Andrew Thomas, by the way, he's going to be a great leader of this, you know, defense for many years. But I think you're going to see that combination. So Stuart Hawkins impressed me. He has a lot of room to grow. We can all agree. He has lots of things he can improve on. He has different ways he can kind of continue to build out his game. But I think we're seeing the raw, you know, the raw skill is there, and it's this already kind of formed, you know, clay that we can turn into a dynamic center back for us for a decade.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think the Stu Hawkins experience with the personnel situation that you mentioned might be coming on us, coming to us sooner than you would think. Let's get to questions real quick and riff on a few of those. Noah, if you got them pulled up.
Absolutely.
Thank you to everyone who always submits these after every single game. Like I always say, it's a good platform to get the discourse flowing, and I appreciate everyone who likes, engages, interacts with the tweets, and gives us some just points of discussion on the show every week. So yeah, let's jump into those now. And Jackson, we'll work you in here too. You can feel free to give your takes on any of the takes that we collected from the people.
Yes, back to the questions this week. And I gotta say, people showed out for a win. A PK win, maybe that's what it was. It was almost a loss. So you guys lobbed all of your scorchers. We appreciate you. We're going to start off here with Dan. This all lead into the question. I just thought this was too funny. Cody Baker flattened that Louisville player. As such, would you rather take on one Cody Baker-sized duck or 20 duck-sized Cody Bakers? We'll start there.
Ooh.
I'm taking
that was a when he flattened that guy. That was a really funny moment. You know, that kind of like juice and moxie we were talking about with Andy T. I think that's an example of how Cody Baker kind of brings that to the table as well. And I liked how he was talking trash to the guy after he did that. I couldn't tell exactly what he was saying, but that was a funny moment. And as for that question, I would probably fight the one Cody Baker sized duck and just try and run away, because I feel like with a bunch of duck sized Cody Bakers, like, they could gang up on you.
Yeah, right? I agree with
so
that.
I would just try and run away from the one with the knowledge that I wouldn't win in a fight against either.
Well, hold
yeah,
on
I like
so
that. I'm doing the same.
Let's just so I understand this, it's one Cody Baker sized duck or 20 I want to read the question again. It's early in the morning, Noah, so I'm actually thinking yeah. through the dynamics of this yeah. because I want to make sure that I face the least amount of Cody Baker as possible.
Absolutely, yeah. So it is one Cody Baker-sized duck, so it would be yeah, okay, Cody I'm taking Baker, that one. Essentially.
Yeah, no, I'm taking that one. I don't want to face okay. any Cody Baker. No Cody Baker whatsoever. That kid is as hard-nosed with as much attitude. He is, I mean, I'm not sure if he's, you know, a long-term fullback for the Sounders, but my God, anytime he's on the field, if you're up against him, watch the F out. He is such, and there's a couple stories that unfortunately I can't tell you guys, but I tell you, this is a kid who has an attitude going into every situation. What I loved about that play where he flattened the Louisville player is after he flattened him, Cody stood over him and like for like 3 seconds and said something. Yeah. And I don't know what he said. It was probably to the effect of like, stay down. And the best part about that was as he's like in the face of the guy looking down on him, the referee is distracted by a Louisville player who's like complaining about something. And the referee doesn't even notice Baker just standing over the guy. Tremendous moment. I mean, listen, Cody Baker, of all of the Sounders, you know, and you include Tacoma Defiance roster, of every single player on the team, Andrew Thomas may bring the intensity, but Cody Baker brings the boom more than I think anybody on this team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also funny. He didn't have the best match. Like, I think I would be the first one to acknowledge that as the designated Cody Baker stan on Twitter. But I still thought that he had some of those just pit bull moments where he just does not give a shit and will body you to the ground and show you, like, I don't care if this is an Open Cup game or an MLS Cup final. Like, I'm putting that shit on the line and I'm going to stand by it. But that is I love that. Next up from Mark Kastner, our resident views merchant, as he
friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the pod. He says keeper controversy? ? So I will pose it like this. Are you still starting Stephen Fry every single regular season game, or are you trying to mix in Andy Thomas as much as possible?
I wouldn't mind seeing Andy Thomas mixed in here and there with the fixture congestion. And Fry, you know, Fry's in his late 30s now. I don't think it would be the worst idea to preserve him. But, you know, I think you kind of are in a situation where you've got two goalkeeper ones. That's sort of how I see it, because I think, you know, red card in the DC United game, which got rescinded, notwithstanding, Stephen Fry has still shown a propensity for making really big game-changing saves this year. But so is Andy T at points. And Andy T won you a PK shootout in the Open Cup. So I don't know if it's a controversy, but me personally, like, I think it speaks to how well Andy T has done this year that I feel pretty much as comfortable going into a game with him in goal as I do with Fry in goal, who, you know, I feel pretty much the same way about Fry this year as I always have. I don't know if some people think he's declined or whatever. I don't really see that as much. I think you got two solid starting goalkeepers on hand here.
I'll agree with you to a point. This is my chance to lob a scorcher. right now think Andrew Thomas is the better goalkeeper than Stefan Fry. And right now, if all things are equal, I would rather start Andrew Thomas in a game than Stefan Fry, because Ari, yes, he's come up with big saves, but look at the road LA Galaxy game where Gabriel Peck scores in the fifth minute and it just goes right under Stefan Fry's arm. That needs to be saved. That absolutely needs to be saved. And Stefan Fry, over the last couple of years, I mean, we've had moments like that where we say, God, Stefan Fry should have saved that. Think to the Vancouver Whitecaps road game last year, the 3-2 win, where Andrew Thomas came up with a couple phenomenal saves, including one where he dives to the, I want to say it's to his left, to the upper V, and takes away a for sure Vancouver Whitecaps goal that would have given them a 3-2 lead in that moment. Andrew Thomas is coming up with the same level of high level game changing saves that Stefan Fry is, but I don't think he's making those small mistakes like Stefan Fry has been. My scorcher is that, you know, Thomas is the better guy, but big old but here. And it's the fact that right now, I don't think that you can change the goalkeeper. It needs to stay as Stefan Fry, because Fry brings the leadership, Fry brings the veteran aspect at a time right now, especially right now where Yemar Gomez-Andrade is out. You need that leadership for the back line coming from your goalkeeper who's been here forever, who's, you know, been making these moments for the last decade plus, and that comes in Stefan Fry. So I think it's very understandable, and it is the right call for Stefan Fry to start in goal as much as he can for the Sounders right now. That can't change. But right now we do have two number ones, Ari, you're right. And in the moment where Stefan Fry decides, okay, you know what, I'm going to call it, that's the moment where you say, okay, finally, here we go. Andrew Thomas, welcome to the show. It's your team. And I, at that point, am more confident than not in that the Sounders are going to get A-plus level goalkeeping for hopefully another decade from Andrew Thomas, because I think we're already seeing that. I mean, and not to mention penalty kick shootouts. I mean, I don't think Fry is particularly great at penalty kick shootout saving. I think Andrew Thomas, we're seeing clearly, you know, it's a mental game, as you mentioned. He gets in the head of other players. He's really damn good at it. And that's going to be, you know, something key down the stretch, you know, in playoffs in the future. So right now it is close. I'll give the edge to Thomas, but I don't think you can make a change until Fry says he's done.
You know, I kind of got to disagree just a little bit there, because I think what I've seen personally is that Fry's veteran leadership is not really changing the backline product that we've seen. It's been shaky either way. And giving Andy Thomas as much of a run as possible. I'm not saying you bench Fry or you switch your first choice goalkeeper to Andy T, but I think you give him as many games as physically possible, especially when you know he's going to be your starting goalkeeper next year. I mean, I made an argument last podcast, or not last podcast, but whenever he got the red card, that like, this shows that, like, what is his decision making? He seems just as frustrated as every other player on the field. And Andy Thomas, man, he seems like he just doesn't give a shit. I mean, like last night, he was just bawling out, and like the swagger that he was living with, the aura that he had, like everything. He embodied exactly what I think this team needs in that leadership and mentality, is that I'm going to fight you. I'm going to punch you in the mouth at every possible opportunity I can. And I don't give a shit where we are in the standings. Like, I want to play soccer and I want to have fun.
Yeah, no, and listen, I think the only part we disagree on there is the part about, you know, giving Andy games over Stefan Fry. I go to the point of consistency. I just want to see the lineup consistency be as consistent as possible on a game by game basis. And maybe with fixture congestion, you can throw Andrew Moore in there over this next month. But Stefan Fry brings you that consistency. And at the end of the day, I want that along, especially not only a back line, but the whole defensive unit. I just want that as much as possible.
Absolutely. All right. We are going to hit a question here from OKB04. Chu looked really bad. Hopefully we have a plan to somehow get some money for him this summer. Georgie, Rothrock, and Leva all deserve more minutes going forward, and Thomas should be our penalty goalkeeper in every shootout going forward. I'm going to focus on the first part of this question. Chu versus Georgie. I want to get the breakdown. I want to hear your guys' view on this. I think the Twitter sphere has been quite a bit reactionary with their assessment of Georgie over Chu, but I'm interested to see how y'all think.
Well, it's funny because I think I mentioned earlier on the show that they kind of remind me of one another so far. I don't know. I really have not seen Georgie enough to make a definitive conclusion on how I rate him. But I definitely, from what I have seen, both at the end of his MLS debut and getting to see him get a little longer run in this Open Cup game, he's definitely a lot of fun. I'm down for him to get more minutes. And Leo Chu is taking a lot of criticism after the game last night. His substitute cameo didn't go very well. There was some more questionable decision making. There was the missed penalty kick. I don't know if I would go so far as to say that I rate Georgie way above Leo Chu right now, just because I haven't seen enough of him to be able to say that. But I mean, I'm down to see him more. Like, I think there's definitely like fun things that he brings to the table, but I don't know. Am I off base for feeling like that the way Georgie was playing was honestly like a little bit similar to Leo Chu? Like, if I had to compare him to someone else on the first team, that's the first person that comes to mind.
I think you're not off base there at all. I think Georgie even comes with a little more burst. Leo sometimes tries to be a little more technical and dance over the ball and, you know, kind of get a defender to bite and then, you know, try to find that prime assist zone. And Leo does a little bit more of that kind of, you know, step over kind of stuff, where Georgie just says, screw it, I'm a run. And he can run real fast, and he's really fun to watch. So I think he has a little more of that burst. But I'm completely with you, Ari. We just haven't seen enough yet to answer that question fully. I haven't seen enough yet. So for right now, and obviously this next month with, you know, games every other week for like 4 weeks, you're going to see a lot of Georgie, I think, naturally, just because we need to see a lot of guys on the field with all of the fixtures. But at the same time, I think the primary fixtures, you're going to see Leo Chu still, just off of the element of the fact that he has more experience. He's done it, you know, for longer at the higher level. And we just need to see more from Georgie, especially more at the Tacoma level, just more in general from Georgie, that he can do that on a consistent basis, find that space on a consistent basis, be able to run into dangerous spots, be goal dangerous, and then do what he did where he found Paul Rothrock for the goal. So if we continue to see that in his, you know, little bit of time, and we continue to see that in his time at Tacoma, then I think that you will slowly see the minutes for Georgie increase and the minutes for Leo Chu decrease. We just aren't there yet, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't love the performance that Georgie put up. I think maybe it's mostly due to the fact that he is not super integrated with this team. But I don't think his spatial positioning is any better than Leo Chu. In fact, I think it's worse. I think that he just doesn't have the field vision yet. And maybe that's because, again, he hasn't played a lot of minutes with this team. But the amount of times where the attack was focused through him in this game, and he just absolutely didn't receive the ball, was not in the position to receive the ball, or played a ball into nobody and turned it over, was, I think, higher than the times where he did play in good balls, which is our entire argument with Leo Chu. I think that he brings those same things that Leo Chu brings, but I don't think that his awareness is as good as Leo Chu, because for all of the criticism that Leo takes, I still think that his field vision isn't that bad. Like, I don't think that I would even compare it. Give Georgie more run. I want to see a bigger sample size. Same with Ari. But honestly, I didn't really, even with the assist, I didn't really love what I saw from him. And I am not starting him over Chu. Are either of them good options? No. That is my take.
I don't think you're off base there. I would also say, did we notice Georgie do much work defensively last night?
Yeah, he was back there. I thought he did a fine job getting back in defensively, which I think is a positive as opposed to Leo Chu, who, at least last season, just didn't defend ever.
You're correct. Yep.
So that is all of the questions that I have collected. Jackson, do you have any questions you would like to pose?
Yeah, I mean, I think the element of this team right now is pretty simple of we're just waiting for them to get healthy and get back together. But the big question I think we should be looking at is what happens in a couple weeks when Pedro de la Vega gets back. When Pedro is finally healthy and we're seeing him do good things at training this week, the hope is that maybe he could be on the bench for Portland coming up on Sunday. Maybe. If not that, then we're looking, you know, towards next week. But when Pedro is healthy, there is an interesting question. I'd love to get both of your takes on what you do with that front four in the attack. I think that Raul has cemented himself as your starting striker based on, you know, what he's done in the early part of this season. So then what do you do with that band of three? If you have Pedro there, you have Albert there. Both are candidates for the 10. Pedro can play on the wing. You have Christian, obviously. Does he slide back a line? You have Jordan. Does he come out of the lineup? How do you fit all of the pieces together, you know, and what is the right recipe to get the attack moving? Because I've been kind of racking my brain trying to figure out if it includes Jordan, if it includes Pedro at the 10, if it includes Pedro on the wing, is he on the right or is he on the left? Does Christian slide back a line? There's so many interesting dynamics of what Brian does with that band of three when Pedro is healthy.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that I've mulled over quite a bit as well. I mean, my hot take, potentially hot take, would be that I think the front four is De La Vega on the left, Rusnak at the 10, Christian on the right, Raul up top, and Jordan's the odd man out in that scenario. And that's kind of just sort of where I land based on the fact that for this team to kind of reach the ceiling that people hoped that it had going into the year, De La Vega needs to be a carry the load week in, week out attacker. And I think the left is supposedly his best position, unless I'm misremembering something. And you just really, you haven't gotten the production really out of that spot so far this year. And I think the way this roster is set up, Rusnak, like it or not, is very clearly the best choice at the center attacking mid spot. And I think Christian is pretty clearly the best choice at the right mid spot. And to me, like, I don't really see much of a debate that Raul is still the best choice at the number nine spot. I know most of his goals have come from the spot this year, and then his goals from open play weren't from sustainable or very repeatable situations, but he's still the only guy on the roster who can pull a goal out of nothing like that, which is a very valuable attribute for a team that has struggled to finish its chances. So I still think he's pretty clearly the first choice option up top. So yeah, I think that front four that I just mentioned is how I would line it up. And it's kind of weird to think about a Sounders lineup with Jordan as the odd man out like that. But based on how this season has gone, like that's kind of how I'm feeling. I don't know.
No, and I want to get your two cents too, I want to get your two cents as well, but really quickly to anchor that point home, you, in that sense, Ari, you get to keep Obed Vargas on the field too, because Obed Vargas has been tremendous these last couple weeks. And if Obed can stay next to Joao Paulo and you put Christian up at the right wing, then yes, it takes Jordan off, but it keeps Obed on. Noah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. I don't give a shit what the lineup is as long as Obed Vargas is on that field. I mean, it is, he is, he has shown that he can be a game-changing player. I would prefer him in the attack, personally. I think that he's shown that he's way more dangerous there. But wherever he is on that field, I want him there. Whether it's to keep him and continue to have him be a core part of the Sounders roster, or to capitalize on the momentum that he's built and move him on to greener pastures, whether that be a championship club or, you know, wherever. Like, I don't care. But I think he deserves the run. And that's my only advocation.
Yeah, I actually, after thinking about this a little more, I want to change my front four. Okay?
Yes.
I want to change my front four. De La Vega, Rothrock, Vargas. with Raul still up top.
With Moose up top.
Committed to the bit.
Yeah, with Moose up top, yeah.
De
La Vega, Rothrock, Vargas, Moose. That's the front four that I would.
That's the front four of a, you know, a team that could win CCL, I think. CCC, sorry. Good.
Do we have any more questions, or should we?
I think we should push on.
Let's push onward. And we can keep this short. I know we've gone pretty long here this morning, and it's early in the morning. Jackson, we appreciate you hanging out with us for this long period of time. But yeah, so the Sounders do have the Portland Timbers coming up at Providence Park on Sunday. It's a Cascadia Cup rivalry match. Those are always a good time. It's always a rowdy time down at Providence Park for these Sounders Timbers rivalry matches. One of the oldest rivalries in Major League Soccer. I think it's still pretty clearly the best rivalry in Major League Soccer, and I don't think it's particularly close, but I'm biased. But I mean, I can tell you guys a little bit about the Portland Timbers. They're pretty bad, honestly, right now, but in a different way than Seattle has been bad. I think we talked about this very briefly on the last show. They have the exact same record as Seattle in MLS play. But it's funny because the Timbers are actually really good on offense. They score a bunch of goals. I think they have either the most goals or close to the most goals in the Western Conference. They've scored like 20 so far. Seattle scored more like 13. The key players for them are Evander, who has been better for them this year, but it still seems kind of streaky. And like, he's kind of got the extreme version of what Raul has been doing, where he doesn't score for a while and then pulls like a banger out of nowhere. Evander is probably the like most egregious player I've ever seen. Disappearing for long stretches of time and then just scoring the absolute like greatest goal that you've ever seen in your life. So he's a very, very talented player, but he's a little bit of an enigma. I can't really figure him out. And then they also signed a new DP forward, Jonathan Rodriguez from Liga MX, who has been playing his first few games for them. He's scored a couple goals, and I think I haven't been paying attention to how he's been doing that much, but like, I remember when they signed him, he's a very highly touted player, kind of similar pedigree to Rui Diaz, I would say. He's definitely, he's a dangerous guy. He can hurt you. He can score a goal at any time. The combination of him and Evander, pretty good offensively. And then Diego Chara is still a rock for them. But the thing about the Portland Timbers, man, is like, they passionately love to concede goals. They don't really, the whole playing defense aspect of soccer, it's a similar approach that the LA Galaxy take at times. They're not really big on that part of the game. If you want an MLS goal, the Portland Timbers are usually happy to give it to you. So my thinking going into this game is that you know, with it being a rivalry game and previous form and all that getting thrown out the window, this being one of the classic bad blood rivalries in MLS, I think you go at this Portland team even on their home field. They've dominated the rivalry in recent years. But they definitely have shown this year that they can get scored on under Phil Neville, who's in his first year coaching them. So I definitely think you definitely don't troll bunker for the 0-0 here, especially with where you are on the table. Like, a win in this game could be a nice little springboard to get Seattle's season back on track, similar to the way Portland has used these wins over Seattle that they've gotten in recent years to springboard their season. So I think you go for the jugular right here, and it might be a crazy shootout type of game because this Portland team is pretty high-powered on offense, but that's fine. It should be a fun and entertaining game. Jackson, how are you feeling going into this matchup?
Oh, well, before we get into the game, this is nice. I don't have to constrain my Portland Sounders preview to a certain amount of minutes because of Sounders Weekly on KJR. So before we get into the game, Portland is just a embarrassing and disgusting organization. It's a disgusting city. Providence Park smells like burnt hair. It's always just so miserable going in and having to be in that city and be in that stadium and look at that color shade of green. It's just a bad time. I really don't like anything about it whatsoever, and I hope I don't have to spend a minute longer than I have to in that city this weekend. That being said, their team right now, you're right, is not playing well. They're shipping goals. I think their talented players are not enough for the mistakes on the team right now. And really, this game will come down to one simple thing, is that's can the Sounders score? I think with Jonathan Bell filling in, the Sounders are not as stout defensively as when Gomez Andrade's in there. Well, Bell, I think, has played well, but I think that Portland is going to be able to get at least one, maybe two in this game, and maybe more, you know, theoretically, if they get going like they did, say, last year when they scored four goals in 19 minutes. So I think that Portland offensively is going to be able to use the I hate to say that they even have talent, but they do, and get offensive production. The question is, can Seattle, can you have Raul do what he does to the Portland Timbers always? Can you get, you know, your Jordan, your Christian, your Albert to play at a high level? Obed, you know, who I think hopefully has earned himself a start as well after his recent performances, him getting up the field. I mean, we remember Obed had the assist to Raul in that goal in Portland last year while playing high up on the right. He found a pocket, he had the cross and the assist to Rui Diaz's goal. So I think if the Sounders offensive players can play to their level, can feel the moment, can feel the magnitude, then I think you're going to see exactly what you said, Ari, a back and forth game. This won't be the, you know, the 1-0 type of Sounders Timbers game coming up on Sunday, I don't think. I think Portland's going to be able to score. It's just going to be a matter of if the Sounders can. I see this game being very easily a 3-2 type game, if not higher, just depending on how things go. I mean, remember in those 19 minutes, Portland just started rolling, and this game for both teams could just start rolling, and both teams could just start lighting it up out of nowhere. So we could be in store for something very exciting. I'm not sure if we'll be smiling after 90 minutes, based on the final scoreline, and based on what our defense may give up. But at the end of the day, and not to mention, we'll see what Alex Roldan is going to do after Alex played heavily on Wednesday. So, if he even plays, I mean, Cody Baker theoretically, but Cody Baker played a lot in that Open Cup game. So I'm concerned with what Portland has offensively. But at the end of the day, I think it comes back to Portland's defense is trash right now, and Seattle's got to take advantage. The only question is, can they?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle's got to flip this narrative a little bit. I mean, we talked about it after the Portland games last year, but there's no question about it that the Timbers own the rivalry right now. And it's not like I don't take joy in saying that. That's just the facts based on the run of results that we've seen in recent years. It seems like we kind of joked about it last year, but the Timbers, they don't really seem to care all that much about any other games except for these games. And then when it comes to their Seattle games, they look like the greatest soccer team that's ever played the game. They look like Real Madrid. So I fully expect them to be doing that. And It's the, like Seattle's just got to be ready for that level of intensity. You can't come out flat. You've got to be ready for a team that's going to be playing like it's the last soccer game that they're ever going to play, because that's how the Timbers play every single time that they play Seattle. And, you know, I don't even, that's credit to them, you know, in a way they treat these rivalry games that the way that they should be. And I remember Schmetz was pissed last year because he felt like the vibe around the team, if I remember what he said correctly, he felt like the vibe around the team kind of wasn't putting the weight on the rivalry that it needed to get the types of energy and the types of performances that you need in a game, in a derby game like this, where, like, you know, both these teams are down on the table right now, but that's entirely irrelevant. Like, once that ball kicks off, it's gonna be a crazy Cascadia rivalry match. It's gonna be tough, it's gonna be physical, and I think with the way it's lining up, hopefully there will be some goals. I'm just hoping for it to, I'm feeling like a 2-2 or a 3-3 type situation in this game, which that would at least be fun to watch, even if it might not be the, I'm not expecting it to be a clinic in how to play defense. Noah, if you got anything on this Portland game, and then we can get out of here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm feeling a real tie match here. Portland likes to ship goals, but ragtag defensive group, and I'm just not like super convinced that the Sounders can score multiple goals away from home. Actually, maybe they can. Maybe that's the only place they can score multiple goals. But I don't know. After heavy minutes in this Open Cup game, after, you know, what we're seeing with this back line, I'm concerned. You know, I'll give you one thing, though. I'll give you one thing to chew on here. We are getting a guaranteed worldie from Evander, and that is just happening. So that's what I got.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be frustrating to watch when Evander lines one up from 35 yards out and there's just nothing that can be done to stop it, because that's just what that guy does at times. All right, let's call it a wrap there for episode 33. We went pretty long this morning here, coming off the Open Cup game last night. Jackson Feltz, 93.3 KJR, Sounders Weekly host. Thank you so much, my guy, for joining us for episode 33 of Lobbing Scorchers. It's been a pleasure having you on, man. We'll get you out of here. Thank you so much to everyone who has been subscribing, all our paid subs. We love you. Much appreciated. Thank you to everyone who's been listening to the show. Our listenership continues to grow. We really appreciate all the support. We'll be back at it after this game in Portland on Sunday for the reaction show. Like, comment, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your parents, tell your family, yeah. Tell everyone.
If you guys want to subscribe, hit that link in the show description. It says support this show. We just upgraded our remote system here so we can have more guests. Hopefully it'll sound better for you guys as well. Jackson, do you want to plug anything?
Oh, yeah. Just Jackson on radio, on Twitter, and I rarely use Instagram, we just do good work. iHeartRadio app, wherever you get your podcast, just look up Sounders Weekly. It's been a pleasure to be on here with you guys. Ari, thank you so much for how gracious you are with your time for joining me each week. Noah, you guys do an amazing podcast. I'll just say, like, and I've said this to both of you guys privately, but you guys, for coming onto the scene in the Sounders pod realm, you guys have just kicked ass. So keep killing it, and I'm happy to help you guys and be on whenever you guys want me.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for coming on. We're going to call that a wrap right here for episode 33. Until next time, we out.
Peace.